we'll start with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will be done. Hi, I'm Suzanne, and I'm your compulsive chair of the 2011 Global Convention. I just wanted to welcome everyone again. It just seems like it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, our fellowship, and I hope we continue to do that next year. So we go outside the walls, way out into the global community. Okay, so of course I have to make some announcements because that's what I do. I guess I like to talk a little bit. The one thing that I do want to say, and I've been saying it at the meals already, is that I want to thank my co-chair. We're calling her the co-chair liaison, Renee. If she could stand up, please. She is awesome, guys. I'm telling you. And I couldn't have done it without her. And unfortunately, she's going to be moving away from us, and she's going to have to come back and visit. So she's not going to be able to be the chair next year, which is usually what a co-chair does. That's why we're calling her the co-chair liaison this year. So we are still in need of a chair and a co-chair. I just wanted to remind you that it is a wonderful commitment to do, and I would encourage any one of you to do it. I have grown so much just by this experience this year, and I would wish that growth for every single one of you. I will give you the qualifications for that. You do need 2 years in program, 1 year abstinence, and you have to have completed all 12 steps. And if you are the co-chair this coming year, you then will step up to be the chair the next year. So please see me. I do have a form that you can fill out, and I'll tell you all about it. I really encourage you to do that. Okay, with that being said, I want to let you know, is Lois here? Okay, so do we have okay, so we're not going to do that quite yet, right? But, yeah, explain it. Come up and explain. She's going to explain the beautiful centerpieces and how you can take them home tonight.
Good evening, everybody. I hope your dinner was great. My name is Lois, and I'm a compulsive eater. Okay, the deal with the centerpieces is I don't want to take them home. And there are 6 objects on there that are real, the notebook, the pen, the cups, the spoons. There's a real big book, the little, 164 pages. It's a real one. And, the iPhone cover. Those are real things. All the rest are dummies, so I did not put a food plan out there. It's just a Hollywood prop. Anyway, underneath, if you would like that, if you want a chance to take this home, underneath each centerpiece is an envelope. And there's numbers, 1 through 10 inside of there. It costs $1 per number. So you throw a buck in, you pull a number out. If you want to win the entire thing, you could pad your chances and throw a $10 bill in and take all the numbers, and then it's yours. But anyway, this is what you do. And then when the time is right, I have a bunch of little numbers in this scale, little container, and somebody will draw a number, and whoever has that number will win the centerpiece. So that's what we're going to do for the centerpieces. And also, the big display outside, if you want to take a souvenir home, you can tear that thing apart. The gears or whatever, a wrench or a person. Okay, so when the time is right, we'll have the little raffle. So put your dollars in the envelopes. Got it?
Got it.
Got it.
And I don't know if any of you have seen that wonderful display of workmen out there at the CEA House store, but that was all done with Lois and her committee. Yeah. Yeah. And stand up, everyone. Yeah. And it's awesome. And I took a picture of it. So I'm going to have that forever. Okay. And then as far as the other raffles are concerned, we've been buying raffle tickets, and they're still for sale. There's the 50-50 tickets still available. Does Diana, do you know how much is in the pot right now? Okay, it's being counted, so I'll let you know shortly how much is in it. You would win half of it, and then the other half is the donation. Okay, so that is going to be picked right before the fashion show this evening. So make sure to get your dollars in for that. I think it's a dollar per ticket. Okay, and then we also have our raffle for next year's convention, the 2012 convention. There's a place to put your ticket in there, right over there. And you put your ticket in, and at the end of the night before the fashion show, someone is going to go home as a lucky winner of the 2012 Global Convention. Registration and all meals, all meals. So, you know, just for that, buy, you know, at least 25. Okay. And that will also be picked right before the fashion show. And then for all the other tickets that you have put in those cups, we will be having a winner's board this year. So at 10 o'clock, you'll be able to go and see if you've won those wonderful prizes there. And we're doing that because we have a wonderful DJ, Dave, Rave Dave, right over there. And he's going to be doing our dancing tonight. We're going to have a DJ dance starting at 10 o'clock. I'm told that they're going to keep the room open a little bit later for us, so we'll be able to stay till 11. And the rest of our fellowship that isn't in this room is going to be able to come in and dance with us, because that's what we're about, is a fellowship, a we program. So I'm really excited about that. I love to dance. Okay, so now I just need to pick three volunteers that are going to pick those raffle tickets later. Could I see some hands? Okay, one, two, and the little one. The little one, the guy. Three. Okay, so I'm going to call you up later. Okay, he really wants to come up. Hold on just a moment. Okay, there's $678 right now in the 50-50. You'll go home with half of that plus whatever else you put in, which I'm sure you will. We're going to close the raffles down tonight at 9 o'clock, right before the fashion show. I'll give you a little cue on that. So try to get them before that, including putting the dollar in for your table decorations. All right. And now, with that being said, I will bring up Roberta, our speaker's chair. And where is Roberta? Roberta. Okay, she has been doing an awesome, awesome job. And I'm going to call her up right now because there's another wonderful speaker that she's going to announce. Okay. Oh, you know something? One thing before I do that, I just thought this would be a little fun. I want to see how many people are from anywhere outside the United States that are here tonight. Would you stand up if you're from outside the United States? Stand up. Okay, whoa. Okay, good. Keep standing. Well, that's all right. You don't have to. And then what about from Eastern Standard Time? Okay. Wonderful. And then how about from Central Time? Look at all of these people coming so far. And then what about from Pacific Standard Time? Okay, stand up, stand up. And then Mountain Standard. Standard Time. And Hawaii Time. Okay. All right. That's wonderful. So I want to give you all a round of applause before we start. Unbelievable. Hey, everybody, are we having fun yet?
That's what we do, is have fun in our lives, and it's so great to be here tonight. Hey, Pamela, how am I doing? Are you doing okay? I say that because Pamela knows me when I first came to program, and I couldn't even talk in public for 3 minutes, let alone in the room for 3 minutes, so I am a miracle. My next introduction, I'm so grateful that she said yes. I thought, when I thought about asking her to speak, I know you're going to, a lot of you know Sober Sue, and a lot of you don't. If you don't, you're in a retreat to hear her experience, strength, and hope tonight. She's got over 15 years in program back to back, and she has a lot of experience that I'm excited to hear from her. So here we go, Sue. Come on up, Sue. Dear God, I'd like to ask you to guide the words that I speak in this continuous participation in the See How Fellowship. I have opportunities to share. So I ask you, God, to help me watch over my thoughts and words. Help my actions be the true and proper reflection of our program. I ask you to focus my thoughts once again, and I seek your guidance. Please, God, bless my words. I'm a grateful recovering compulsive eater, and my name is Sober Sue. This is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I don't know what I'm doing here, but we're having fun. Boy, we clean up nice, don't we? I saw a few of you by the pool earlier. You look really good now. I've been a compulsive eater since birth. I don't remember it, but I know that I started eating compulsively early on. I was, as you know, when you get to do a lot of these service positions, and this is all this is a service position, you start to reflect on some of the things that you've gone through to get here. And I grew up in the state of Washington, and I remember at a very, very young age, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years old, my girlfriends and I would go up the street where they were building all these houses. There was construction going on. And we would go over there, and we'd play in the houses that were half-built. They were frames, but they weren't finished. And we'd go in there, and we'd play in there. And we just had the best time playing. You know, this is my bedroom. This is my kitchen. And I went up to this one board, and on this board was this black, drippy stuff coming down off the board. And I looked at it, and I was so intrigued. I pulled it off, and I put it in my mouth, and I started chewing it. It was tar. And I was chewing on this tar, and I just thought, this is so great. You know, I discovered something new to eat, you know. And I don't know other people that aren't compulsive eaters that would do that, you know, that would pick something up like that and just put it in their mouth and start chewing on it. And so you know, my early addiction started very, very young. I used to go to the Five and Dime store. It used to be called the Benjamin Franklin Five and Dime store. And that's when, back when you could buy a something for a penny, something for a nickel, and I would get 35 cents for an allowance. And I would take that 35 cents, and every Saturday I would go to the Five and Dime store. And I would buy 7 things, because 35 cents is 7 items and a nickel apiece, and I would eat those all the way home. And when I got home, I didn't have any left. So what I would do is, instead of trying to earn extra money, I would go into my mom's purse and I would steal money from my mom. And I would go into my sister's piggy banks and I would steal money from my sisters. So there's a lot of this kind of activity to help support my addiction. And I started that very early on. And what happened was, I would get in trouble. I would get caught. I would get in trouble. My mom would punish me. I was grounded until I was 35 years old. I swear, on my 35th birthday, my mom said, "You're not grounded anymore," you know. And this disease picked me up and carried me into such places of getting in so much trouble. And I hated myself for doing that, but I couldn't stop. See, I didn't understand. I didn't know I had an addiction. That's what I didn't understand. When I was growing up and moving on in my life, there were, we call them incomprehensible demoralization.
And we call that in the big book, we call it incomprehensible demoralization. And there were all these episodes, that things that were happening to me. I was working at my first job. I finally graduated from college, and I was working at my first job. And my boss, all of a sudden, he said, "Sue, I need to speak to you after work today." And that's all he said, was, "I need to speak to you after work." And, of course, my mind went running with it and running with it. What could he possibly – I'd only been there 2 weeks, and I couldn't think, what could he possibly be wanting to talk to me about? Did I come in late? Did I not do something right? What possibly could he talk to me about? And he pulled me in after work, and he walked up to me, and he said, "Has anybody ever talked to you about your weight?" And I just died. And because I'm a compulsive eater who knows how to change things on the spot, I know how to talk my way out of something, I turned to him and I said, oh, yes, don't worry, I've been dieting and I'm going to lose this weight and don't worry about it, it's going to be gone soon. But I died that day. Part of me just shrunk and died that day. All those kind of episodes kept happening, and those were little pieces of seeds that were planted along the road. When I finally got into recovery, because I have a disease that travels through four different areas. I call it the four D's: drinks, drugs, donuts, and doing it. Those four D's took me into areas that I don't want to talk about. But I knew that I needed to get into recovery for this. And so I got into my first 12-step program, and I started working the steps there. And when I started working the steps, I got to step six. And in step six, I realized that I had given up the drugs, I had surrendered the alcohol, I had surrendered the boys, but I still had food there. And I didn't realize how much it had a grip on me. And we were out camping one time on a Thanksgiving weekend, and we were out camping, and I had purchased something at Costco. Now, anything at Costco is a portion in my mind. Across the board, it was a portion. So I bought this item at Costco, and I was sitting in the tent when we were camping, and I'm in the tent, and I bought the off-brand name. I didn't buy the real brand name, and I'm eating this in the tent, and I'm thinking, this really tastes no good. It doesn't taste like the other stuff. And wouldn't it be nice of me if I were to take this out and give it to everybody else around the campfire? They would just think I was just such a good person. And I sat there, and I thought, okay, next bite, I'm going to take the rest out. And then I sat there again, and I ate another bite. Okay, this one, last three of these, I'm going to eat three more, then I'm going to take the rest out and give them to the crowd. Three more went down, and I just kept biting and eating and biting and eating. And what ended up happening was I couldn't stop at that moment, no matter if I wanted to or not. And I clearly saw that this was a severe problem. And so what happened with me, when I started to take a look at these steps, and these steps were working on me, I realized I had a food addiction. And I thought, okay, if I've got a food addiction, I need to find a 12-step program to help me with this. Because after all, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself in my other program. And I thought, all I need to do is find another 12-step program. So a girlfriend of mine from AA, we both went to this one 12-step program. We walked in there and we heard, "Let go of sugar and flour." And that's all I heard, was "let go of sugar and flour." And we left that day, and we went back to our meeting, and I said, okay, I'm going to sponsor you, and you're going to sponsor me. It's the same 12 steps. We can just do it here in AA, okay? And we decided that's what we were going to do. 40 pounds more onto me later, I realized that wasn't working and that I could not work this in another program, that I needed to go and find the program that would help me with my food addiction. So a couple of months went by, and my girlfriend came up to me, and she goes, "Look, I've heard of this brand-new program. It's called Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. How? Let's go to it." And I said, "Sure, you know, sign me up. I'd never heard of it." You know, and it was right when CHOW was starting. And she said, "Let's go to the meeting." And so the night before, we went to my very first meeting on a Saturday, April 21st, 1994. I went out the night before on a binge that I hope I never forget. I took my husband to a restaurant, and I ate until I couldn't eat another bite because I knew it was the Last Supper, and I ate for 12. I knew it was it. And so I ate for 12 that night, and we left that restaurant, and we went by Claim Jumper because I wanted to get the dessert to go. And it was the biggest one they had, and I took that home, and I ate it. I have never had such physical pain from that, and to this day, I've never forgotten that. The next morning, we got up, and she came in, she picked me up, and we started off to our first CHOW meeting. And as we're driving there, we thought, let's stop and get some coffee. But we stopped at a bakery. And we're stopped at this bakery, and we go in there, and we get what we wanted, and we go to the CHOW meeting. And we walk into the CHOW meeting, and I heard, I saw, I felt recovery in the room. Because when people stood up and said, I've been here this amount of time, I'm this kind of sponsor, I'm not glum. I'm not bored. I'm not being tortured. They looked like they were happy, and they were talking about being happy. And they stood up, and I started to cry. And I didn't know why I was crying, but I was crying. I was so excited to find some place that I could address this food addiction that I had. And that day, I got my very first sponsor, Linda. And Linda and I started working the 12 steps together, and I worked through all the 30-day questions, worked through the 30 days, and then I had to go to my inventory. Now, Linda hadn't completed her inventory yet, so I needed to find another sponsor. So I got an inventory sponsor, and she's in this room. Pamela and I have been together for 15 years, minus 30 days. She has done more for me in carrying the message. See, it's not about Pamela, although she thinks it's about her. It's not about her. It's about her carrying this message. Not her message, not my message. It's about her. It's about her carrying this message to me. And Pamela and I started working together, and we started having such a good time. That was the joy about this, is that they made these steps fun. It didn't feel like I was being punished. And it didn't feel like I was being a bad girl anymore. And I wasn't grounded. Pamela has never grounded me once. She should have. But she has never grounded me once. And Pamela and I started working these 12 steps together. And then I started working the workbooks in the program. And because I've been here 15 years, 3 months, and 16 days, but who's counting? With continuous abstinence. That is this program. I've not had to go back out because I did all of that going out before I got here. Just because I got here and stayed doesn't mean I don't understand what it is to slip. I slipped and slipped and slipped for year after year after year getting here. And there isn't a single person that woke up one morning and said, I took my first compulsive bite, I better go to CHOW. We learn what this disease is about. Coming to this, getting to this program. I heard a speaker one time said, the difference is my bottom coincided with my entry into CHOW. And that's what happened. My bottom was here. Now, I've been at plenty of bottoms. I've been at bottoms when I got fired. I was at a bottom when the doctor said, you need to work on your weight. I was at a bottom at all these different places when I felt so sick from food that I couldn't stand it. I was at a bottom, but this was different because it came with a surrender. And every single day for 15 years, 3 months, and 16 days, I've surrendered 3 times a day. I've surrendered more than 3 times a day because I have to surrender my husband. I have to surrender my bosses. I have to surrender my clients. I have to work, and I get to work this incredible program in all areas of my life. I've gone through the 12 traditions in the checklist. And when I found out I don't get to govern my husband anymore, that was breaking news. My husband used to look forward the days I would go see my sponsor. He couldn't wait for me to go. Don't you have to go see her today? Aren't you going? And my husband has never said, can you stay home tonight? Not once has he ever said that. He realized that the benefit that I was getting from this program. He understood what was happening. He understood the change, the things that were happening. Here's how ridiculous I used to be. My wonderful, incredible husband, I used to come home from my morning meeting, and I would be so upset. It was a 6:15 a.m. meeting, and I would be so upset because he'd still be in bed. And it's like, he should have been up when I got up at 4, you know, because I would rollerblade to that morning meeting. He should have been up at 4. He could have painted the house. He could have mowed the lawn, you know, re-hung the cabinets in the cabinet. But he wasn't. He was still in bed. And I would get so mad at this. And so I would come home and think, I got to get him out of bed. How am I going to get him out of bed? He's not supposed to be sleeping in. After all, look at how long I've been up. And I would say, you know what, honey? It's laundry day. And I would go, and I literally would start pulling the sheets off of him while he's in bed. I know. I know. And I'd take these sheets off of him so that he would get up because I thought he was getting something that I was missing. I thought he was getting to sleep in. And my sponsors would tell me, you know, you don't get to manage him. He is not yours to manage. He's got a God. Leave him alone. Let him be alone. And it got so severe that after the morning meeting, I couldn't go home anymore. Because in the morning, if he was still in bed, it would freak me out. So I'd rollerblade to the park, and I would meditate and think, okay, he's up now because he's going to work. So then finally, after about 6 months of this, I realized that, you know what? Out of all that meditating in the park, he was getting up on time for exactly what he needed to do. I was getting up on time for exactly what I needed to do. He wasn't sleeping in. He was just doing what his life was about. He didn't have to be at work until 9 o'clock. He doesn't have to get up and put makeup on and do hair. Gets up, you know, does the three S's and goes to work. You know, and some, ask your sponsor. So my wonderful husband, all of a sudden, he started to realize that laundry day wasn't as often as he thought, and I didn't have to take the sheets off anymore. So then it changed for me. It shifted. That perception shifted, and I would rollerblade home, and then all of a sudden, I get to crawl in bed with him. And I'd crawl back in bed with him. We'd stay there for another half an hour, 45 minutes. He'd be late to work. You know, and I wouldn't care. This would be, you know, he's 7 years younger than me. And one cute guy. You know, there's no coincidence. Larry, my husband, came into my life at a point when I didn't deserve a man that good. Because I was an alcoholic. I was 27 years old. I was fat. I was out of control. But God brought this man into my life. And I saw this person. I was working in a dental office. And he came in as a patient. And when he walked in that day, I saw him and I thought, God, there's something really nice about this person. And he filled out the chart and he went into the back. And when he got done, I went and I looked at the chart and I thought, oh, my God, he's only 20 years old. He's not even old enough to drink, you know. And I'm 27-year-old divorcee. And I'm thinking, I can't do anything with this. Well, a year and a half went by, and during this time, Larry and I started to talk. And he was in college, and he started to share things. And we both had this huge passion for cars. And so we started talking about cars, and we were just having this wonderful conversation. And then I'm leaving now to go to another position. And he says, wait, you haven't even gone out with me yet. And that's how he asked me out. And I said, well, okay, now he's 21 and a half. You know, I'm older. And we start going out. And all of a sudden I realized here is this human being that has a spiritual way of life, a spiritual way of thinking, and there's something really special about him. On April 1st, 1994, I started writing a gratitude list. And I wrote two gratitude lists, one to God and one to Larry. And I would give him this gratitude list every morning. And, of course, I expected him to give me one back. But he didn't. And what happened was I kept thinking, you know, I finally asked him one day, I go, so Larry, what do you think about these gratitude lists I'm giving to you? He says, well, at first I thought I was in trouble and that you were trying to work through it. But then I realized I wasn't in trouble anymore. And what happened was on April 1st, 1994, I wrote those, 1996, I'm sorry, April 1st, 1996, I wrote the first gratitude list to God. I wrote the first gratitude list to Larry. On April 21st, 20 days later, was the first day I came in to see how. I started to accept who I was at that moment in my disease, in my sickness, and God said, she's ready. And he opened those doors for me. He brought me in to see how. 10 more. He brought me in to see how. And I got to meet Ray, and I got to meet Fred S., and they didn't water down this program. They carried the message of recovery to me. And they handed it to me and said, it's yours. It's yours to do with what you want. See, that's the gift. It's handed to us, and then we get to take it and use it, utilize it in our lives. Take it and honor it. Now, I've tried to this was amazing to me. As I was originally losing the weight, I kept thinking, okay, God's carrying the message through me right now as I'm losing weight. And then I kept thinking, I was learning about the traditions, and I knew about attraction rather than promotion. And I kept thinking, God, how are you going to carry the message through me once I've lost the weight? How is it, you know, I'm certainly going to have to go out and promote it then, you know, because nobody's going to be asking. But I thought, how is he going to carry the message? And what I learned is that every time I packed something for my meal and carried it into a restaurant, carried it on an airplane, carried it into work, people started to ask. Those who were compulsive eaters would say, what do you have over there? That's how God carries the message to other people these days. It's the way I carry myself. It's the way I eat. I heard the saying one time, you may be the only big book somebody ever sees. And I hope and pray I'm the best big book that somebody, the best of my ability that I can be. You know, I've learned now not to flip people off on the freeway because you never know if they're going to follow you in the parking lot to the meeting. You know, you're driving along, you cut them off. You don't want them to follow you in there afterwards and go, oh, God, she's one of those, and look what she's been, she's got to work a 10th step, you know. And, you know, you have to, I have to watch these things. But the gift is that, you know, I am not perfect. I am not driven white as snow. But, boy, I'm a long way from where I came. Boy, I'm a long way. One of the things that I have my sponsees do along with, well, let me back up. In my third year of recovery, I tried to do a random act of kindness on a daily basis. But what would happen was I would get so excited about that random act of kindness that I would tell you, or I would tell you, or guess what happened, and I kept telling people, you know, and that really kind of depletes it. It doesn't count that much, you know. And I kept saying, okay, God, you know what, I gotta really do this. I gave up because I couldn't do these random acts of kindnesses and then not tell anybody. So a couple of years go by, and the next thing I know, I thought, maybe I'll try it again. Because you know how you're in meetings and you hear these things and you think, well, yeah, that's right, that random thing, that random act of kindness thing. You know, maybe I'll try that again. And the next thing I know, I tried it again, but this time I didn't have to tell anybody. It was amazing to feel the change that God did for me. See, I didn't make changes in me. All I did was show up and cooperate with these steps. God said, I need you to be honest. I said, okay, I'll weigh and measure. Okay, I need you to do this. I need you to carry the message. Okay, I'll get a car. You know, God doesn't give me material things without expectations. He wants that car filled up with people and taking them to meetings. You know, he gives me a handbook or, you know, he gives me material. I've got to take that and carry it to somebody else. And it's amazing. In 2003, I had a very, very, very severe rollerblading accident. And I broke my neck, broke my shoulder, ribs, face, the whole nine yards. And for a year and a half, I lost the function of my left arm, and their pain was completely severe. For a year and a half, I was laid up in bed. What happened during that time, I had to stop working. I had to give up my job. I stayed at home. I couldn't leave the house. I couldn't leave the bedroom. I couldn't sit in a chair any longer. I couldn't hardly stand. And see how meetings came to my house. People came to my house. People brought me abstinent meals. My husband, Larry, we got married. Larry would go in the kitchen because for 8 years at that time, I had always written down my food and left it on the kitchen counter. And Larry knew to go in there and look for my food, and then he tried to fix it. Tried. Hot was cold and cold was hot. But he knew enough to make weigh and measure it. And he did the very, he called special, Larry special stuff, you know, and he kept putting these little, he's not a cook, you know, but he really did the best he could. And it carried me through my abstinence. It carried me through my life. I did not know when I got here in 2000, or in 1996, I did not know that I needed to be abstinent. I needed to be in recovery because some of the most difficult things in my life were ahead of me. I had a cushy life compared to what I and the fellowship has walked me through since I've been here. In 18 months, my mom died, my grandfather died, my stepdad died. I had a miscarriage, and I found out I couldn't have children. That was in 18 months. This program never fails. It never fails. There's nothing that we can't go through together to get through. 11 years ago, my mom and I had been on a cruise together. Now, my mom came into the program about 12 years ago, and we decided to go on this cruise together. And we decided to go on a cruise because I knew that at least I could get the right foods. And so we went on this Mediterranean cruise. And on the last day, my mom had this terrible pain in the back of her shoulder. And I thought she just overshopped and it was too many souvenirs. And what happened was she got home that day and went to the doctors a couple of days later. And she called me and she said, they've tested me for tuberculosis. You better go get tested. Because we've gone to Turkey and Greece and all these places. And so I went and I got tested for tuberculosis and I didn't have it. And I called her back up a couple of days later and she goes, I don't have it either. She goes, but I found out I have lung cancer. My mom's in the program with me. What we did is my mom trusted me, the girl that was grounded till she was 35 years old, to go up to her house, to sell her house, to move her down to Duarte, because that's where the City of Hope is. And we moved my mom down to Duarte, and my mom trusted me. Now, there is never anything wrong in God's world. I have never been able to have kids. I have five sisters. They have a multitude of kids. None of them are alcoholics or compulsive eaters, except one now. They had a different journey in their life. My journey has been about recovery. God needed me to be here to help carry a message that was carried to me and then carry it forward. So when we moved my mom down here, I became basically her primary caretaker. You know, I could be there at nights. I shut down my business and I could be there at nights and so forth with her. And as we took my mom to the hospital over and over and over again, I would go to the hospital with her, and every single time there was a location where I could have the meals that I needed. And I went to the hospital with her, and I would take her grain, and I would tear down the hospital food, and I'd rebuild it to abstinent food. My mom died in 88 days, and she died abstinently. When I saw that gift, I had carried the message to her about what I was doing in CHOW. She carried a message back to me saying, there is nothing that you can't go through that CHOW won't help you with. And that's what I learned from that, is that I never go through any of this alone. Ever, ever, ever. My older sister, Becky, kept asking me about this program for years. And she tricked me one time. She said, will you be my sponsor? And I said, okay, I'll be your sponsor. And I gave her a food plan, and I never saw her again. No, I gave her the food plan, and and she basically went off and tried it alone. I have learned I can be on a desert island with a big book and a food plan, and I won't remain abstinent. I have to have the fellowship. I have to have the we of the program. I have to be able to talk with people, to share with people, to commit my food on a daily basis, to do all of these things, to pray, to meditate. So my sister Becky got the food plan, and she took off with it, basically. And it took her about another 10 years before she came back, and she's been in the she's been in another program because she's in Northern California. They don't have this as much up there, but she's in another 12-step program that she found her own recovery for herself. I hope that she'll start a CHOW meeting up there. But the gift is that I don't have to control people today. I can let people go. I can let them be themselves. I've learned to be myself. There are three things I was never going to do in my life that was get up in front of a group of people, tell you how much I weighed, and read out loud. Now, if I had known CHOW was about any of that, I wouldn't have showed up. But I've learned that I can do just about anything here by trusting God, cleaning house, and helping others. And that's what the steps have done for me. And the traditions. And I hope if you haven't had a chance to work those traditions, oh, my God, get into the traditions because they help you so, 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 so much. With every relationship that I have, every single relationship has benefited because of the traditions. I was really, really, really nervous to come up here tonight, more so than I can tell you. You know, a lot of you know me, and I've come up here many times. But for some reason, I was extremely nervous, and it was because of all the incredible sharing that I've heard over this weekend. I kept thinking, wow, she's got a great message. Wow, you've got a good message. How am I going to get up there and say anything? Because they already all know it. They already feel it. They already are so aware of it. So I was extremely intimidated. I told Susan, oh, I'm going to do something real quick. I'd like Pamela and Susan to come up here. Pamela's my sponsor, like I said, for just 1 month of 15 years, shy of 15 years. And this is one of my other sponsors, and I want them to both come up here. Because without them, I couldn't have gotten a message. They're like stepmothers to each other, you know. They talk to each other like they're stepmothers, you know, because they both sponsor me. These women know more about me.
I know.
She loves doing this. These women, get up here. Stay here. These women know more about my life than any of my five sisters. Than more than my sisters, than more than my husband. I have been able to talk with them on levels that I never knew I could pull out of my gut and share. And they have kept it secret, I hope. As far as I know, they haven't shared it. Get a sponsor. It doesn't have to be as special as they are. I know. It doesn't have to be as special. In other words, just get a sponsor. Start working the program. Get into the minutia of this program. Get into it. Love it. Fill it up. Take it and just hand it out to everybody that you can. And remember, you know, just do this. It is just, I can't even tell you how fabulous this is. I didn't think I was going to cry up here. And I have fake eyelashes on up here tonight. You know, I'm running out of things to say except God is huge in my life. I shut the door on God back in high school because I had an attitude and a rebellious nature, and I said, God, I am so done with you. And it wasn't until I got to these 12-step programs that I was reintroduced to God through this big book, The 12 Steps. And I just want to share real quickly, this book is indexed and highlighted. It's a big book. When I was laid up in my bed for a year and a half, all I could do was walk through one page at a time and then index it. And I indexed it for myself. This one says fear. This one says parties, you know, night sweats, women, blackouts, you know, substitute for alcohol or sugar. You know, this is what that meant to me at that time. And I went through and I indexed this book. Get into the book because it will save your life and give you a life that is so far beyond belief, you won't even be able to imagine it. Thank you so much for letting me share.